Jack's proxy.
You are here to talk to us about the emergency measures plan, and the floor is yours. Off you go.
Well, thank you very much. First, we do a little bit of introduction. Everyone's here, but my name is Brian Hatt. I was born in Milton, actually Liverpool, a few years ago. I left at age 19 to join the RCMP. I completed 35 years. My last 10 years, I was posted here in Liverpool. So I'm quite familiar with some of the problems here and some of the people, and I've dealt with emergency services pretty well over half my life. I retired in 06, and 14 I became the emergency management coordinator for the area. So we've divided the presentation up into small groups, and I'll start with an introduction of my team. Louis Landry.
Hi, I'm Louis Landry. I'm living out in Port Matoum right now. 2014, I retired from the military after 32 years as a military policeman. I was offered an opportunity to be interviewed for this position. Throughout my whole military career, I actually dealt with EMO, so and participated in floods and fires and whatnot at home and abroad. And so I've been Brian's sidekick for the last 5 years. Yeah. Heather?
In addition to my role as communication and engagement coordinator, I'm the public information officer.
And Rhonda Matthews.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rhonda Matthews. I gave you your brief back in November after the election to talk about roles and responsibilities according to the Act. And so today we're specifically going to talk about your program. So I work for the province. I'm based at Halifax, but I'm responsible to work with all municipal units between Lunenburg and Yarmouth. I'm originally from Newfoundland. I also have a military background, so 24 years, and have done some emergency work there. And I've been with the province now for 3.5 years. So I am your representative, your liaison from the Emergency Management Office, and I work quite often with Brian and Lou in support of your plan and your program. So I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
So yeah, I believe you have a copy of the agenda. We're going to be going through the emergency program with some new items that are involved with that. Planning committee, EOC, training, exercise, communications. I'm going to start off with the Region of Queens, the emergency plan. This plan is considered a living document. It's continually changing to meet the requirements of the county. And Shelley Connolly manages the plan. So if you need an up-to-date copy, you see Shelley, and she'll have the most up-to-date. You can. There's a update list in the built-in plan. You want to know whether you have the most up-to-date copy of the plan? And if you check that section, you'll see the date of the last revision. And if yours is the same, well, then you've got the close up to date. So, and you can see her anytime. She'll provide either a thumb drive, or she'll give you, or make arrangements to give you a written document. Okay. So, yeah, section 19.1 in your plan gives the updates. Lewis and I completed a hazard risk and vulnerability analysis of the 26 events. What we did was there was a list of events that we went through and chose how likely that event may happen here, and rated that in 1 to 6. And then we listed the possible effects of that occurrence and listed those, and then we put a short list of things that would, and who would be involved in, to mitigate the problems that would arise from that event. So that may be new in some of your plans. I think we did 26 possible events. also, regarding the assessment of the plan, we go through a yearly assessment. And normally we have someone come out from Halifax, but Rhonda usually helps us with that. Anyways, so now we have a self-assessment tool, and we're gonna use that this time. And get Rhonda to help us out with that for the first run, and basically it uncovers if there's any problems in the plan, or if it needs to be revised, or if there's something new that we have to add, correct? Does all that, gives us that information, and of course we react to that. A lot of the stuff we come up with on these revisions we'll take to the planning committee, and Lewis is gonna go over that, how that functions. And it may be a certain department that we need to deal with, and they have a representative there, and we'll get into that more detail. So we expect our next assessment the 3rd of August, and we'll be done here with the help of Rhonda. Okay, so we're going on to agreements. Oh, wait a minute. I'll jump out of turn. You had some information on the local state of emergency that you wanted to give. Sarah's going to deal with that.
So we just added this to the presentation, not to reiterate the information that was already provided when I gave your elected official brief back in November, but I just wanted to point out that this is one of the programs that you have available, or avenues that you have available to you in the event of an emergency that you need to have special powers. So I just wanted to add this to the list to bring that back to your attention as something that can be used by you to get access to those special powers if you need them during an emergency. So I also want to remind that when we are in a state of emergency provincially, say a local emergency can't exist at the same time. So if there's something that is happening that you need to have access to special powers, then that would need to be incorporated into the state of emergency. Hopefully that won't be the case for too much longer. We'll see how the COVID situation continues. But for right now, that's the avenue that we would have to take. So you would have to go through Brian, who will contact me or the duty officer, and then we would get it included at the provincial
Thanks, Ron. We have some agreements in place now, and what happened was some of the departments, we had agreements in place for years, and they were getting aged, I guess, and some of the departments didn't feel it was appropriate for today. So we come up with two new agreements. One was for comfort centers and emergency shelters, so that this put a lot of things in place. All if there's an emergency, you have to deal with them. They're already in place and agreed to, like financial stuff and who's responsible for what and who's going to open the comfort center and where. That's all part of this. So, and there, the second agreement was for a shower facility. We could get places lined up in case of water shortage that people could use to get showers, so the public shower. And basically, since these agreements were approved by you, we've had most of the historic conference center sign off on it, and the agreements were brought back for ratification here and will be sent out to them. And enough have signed the agreements. There's still some that have yet to sign. But even without those being signed, there's enough now that we're comfortable that we can cover off if we have a necessity for a comfort center. So it'll be nice when the rest fall in, but right now we're looking good for that. The shower facilities, we have possibility of signing off for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 areas that are tentatively looking at the shower agreement so that we can use their facility as a public shower if we run out of water. Two of them are, one's commercial and the others are recreational complex. in the Greenfield area, and they're, they haven't said no, but they do have the agreement and they're looking at it now. We've got facilities lined up in West Queens and North Queens, and of course, South Queens in the past, historically, we've got an agreement with for use of the Ramirez Center for public showers. So we're spread out. We have a problem in Port Medway and Mill Village area. We can't identify a place that would be suitable for this. So if anybody comes up with an idea or a place that I'm not aware of, we can have a look at that for shower, public shower facility. So things are going well there, and I expect before we need it, we'll have enough places signed up for showers that we should be able to meet most areas of necessity.
Do any of the fire halls have a shower facilities?
North Queens has one.
I mean, in Port Mattoon or?
There's no fire hall in Port Mattoon.
Port Medway, I meant to say, sorry.
No, I checked with them.
Sorry.
They don't.
Or down in Greenfield area?
Greenfield has one small shower, and we've got two places there that have public facilities for showers that we're anticipating would be positive. North Queens, when I spoke with them about the Covenant Center agreement, they mentioned that there's a slight, it could be a major problem, that when they provide water to the public for use when there's a water shortage, they put a hose out through the doors for people to get water so they don't have to man the station. And people are parking in front of the doors, so they're looking at a way to provide the water through the side of the building for people to fill up their bottles or whatever. So I haven't been involved in that. I expect that they'll come to Chris with this idea. And that's, the rest are happy?
Down in Port Medway, Mill Village, I think a lot of them get water from the post office.
Yeah.
I think they have a tap that they allow people to get water from.
Yeah.
So there's no questions on those agreements. They seem to be going well.
That's good.
And we're going to continue working on them. It's been an uphill climb for a while, but I think we're on the other side of it. Anyways, turn it over to Lewis to explain the planning committee and how it works.
Planning committee has a couple of major options. The planning committee is actually the keeper of the plan, the big binders that you have on your desk. It's very much a living document. Every day it changes. There's a phone number that's going to be changed or added or whatever. So the planning committee is chaired by our CAO, but it's quite often hosted by Brian and I. And we invite a whole bunch of people that would normally be involved in the EOC, the Emergency Operational Center. That includes TIR from the province, Natural Resources, RCMP, Health and Services. The fire departments have appointed two people to represent all five fire departments that sit on our committee, Charlie Greer and Dan Stevens. So they come to our meeting as well. People from Municipal Services come, Adam Grant and Scott LeBlanc, and of course our communications director. And we also have, you remember we used to have a room here in the corner with a bunch of radios? We have somebody in charge of that also comes to the meeting. So we need every quarter. So the most important job we do is to maintain the plan. And another important job that we do is we invite Red Cross as well. And it's for us all to get together during a non-emergency to get to know each other and know faces and names and whatnot, so we can actually kind of have a team building atmosphere if we ever have to come together during a national emergency. Some of the challenges that we do have is that sometimes we're not well supported. So it's a challenge sometimes to get all of the outfits out at the same time. We've had some awesome, really good turnouts, but then again, on the odd quarterly meeting, we've had very few people show up. So that's one of our big challenges, is having everybody show up. So, and that's the plan. EOC, the emergency operational center, Is responsible for policy and strategic direction. This is a municipal level emergency operations center. Site support and consequence management, info collection, evaluation and display, coordination of agencies and operations, resource management, and internal and external communications, which is probably the, one of the biggest important pieces of our EOC. So our, if you get the next slide, that's what the EOC, so the EOC location is actually in this room, and in your plan, chapter, or yeah, section five, at one time we had, all of your desks would be occupied by somebody in, on that graph. And we actually had, remember, if you remember, you had telephones on your desk. So we had all that laid out at one time, so now that's kind of been put off to the side because the chambers are being changed. So once the chambers are finalized, then we'll reintroduce a new chart to what the EOC, this room here, and layout would actually look like. So we do have one, but it's living document, the plan, right? So it's ongoing. So I don't know if you have any questions as to who might, Brian and I are under the planning section. So what would happen is if there's an emergency, that's, we go on generally on 12-hour shifts, and if Brian would take the day shift and I would take the night shift, and if Brian is on the day shift, then he's planning the night shift's activities, okay? Forecasting any meals or, you know, need a dozer for something or other, you know, or whatever happens to be going on. So the planning section actually plans 12 hours up, okay? And then the operations section chief, if it's a forest fire, then it would be someone from forestry. If it's a police issue, there's a mass, an active shooter, then it would be a policeman in that job, right? Asking the floor here for assistance, whether it be more ambulances, buses, et cetera, right? Logistics is Adam Grant. And that he would liaise with the municipality in regards to any of the resources that would come from the municipality, dozer or dump truck or whatnot. And of course, a very important section is the finance and the admin, because anything that is decided in this room, there's always a money value, right, or money consequence that has to be approved by the CAO and or you and the mayor, right, because it's going to affect budgets. I know that's hard to read, but what we've done is we've actually made, it's called the EOC Triggers, and it's just a guide, and the plan is actually a guide. It's not, anything in the plan is not solid, it's just it's a plan, it's a book of suggestions. And under here, for instance, this would tell us whether we should look at opening up the EOC or not. We should have a full activation. And if I could go down to number two, there are weather, so just a weather storm. So it says here, you know, the criteria is expected to meet with within 24 hours, blowing snow 200 miles in winds, 30 kilometers an hour is expected to last for 3 hours, freezing rain, wind chill, etc. And then it says who is to be called out. So that's just a trigger matrix that we have. It encompasses a whole, there's more pages. It encompasses a whole bunch of different scenarios in which we follow, and we would make a phone call to Mr. McGill to say, perhaps or perhaps not, we should open the EOC, depending on what's going on. And that's it for me. Any questions?
Having a coordinated training and exercise. So providing your staff and the volunteers that support your municipality with courses and training sessions means that they have the knowledge available to support you during an emergency situation. So at NSEMO, we support the Incident Command System, which is a national-wide program used in the United States and in Canada and elsewhere. And it's a system that's widely recognized to help manage an emergency. We provide training in ICS level 100, which is available online to anybody who needs to take it. 200 is a two-day session, 300 is a three-day session for select individuals. Not everybody is expected to take these courses. There is an ICS 402 that is available for you and other senior partners who would like to have a basic knowledge of the program. Then we can schedule that for you. It'll take a couple hours and it'll just introduce you to the program. Or you can take the ICS 100 on your own time online and we can provide you with that information. So both of those options are available to you. Other sessions that we provide from the provincial level are with regards to the operation of the coordination center or the operation center. The ICS 200 is a prerequisite for that, but that will support your staff in understanding what their roles are and how they can operate within the center. There's also an information officer course, which Heather has tried several times to take, and the scheduling didn't quite work out for that with COVID interruptions and other things. But we're going to try and run another session in the fall, and then we'll make sure that Heather has access to that. There's a communication system that we use at the provincial level called WebEOC. It's a situational awareness tool. It is still under construction and being built. So we provided some information session and orientation sessions to the coordinators and the staff across the province so that when we do the official rollout and everything is completed, we'll be able to be one step closer. And we're hoping in the fall that it will be complete and we'll be able to use it full on. That will be available to you for free. You'll be able to log in, access information during an emergency. You can use it at the municipal level for any emergencies that are happening here. We'll be using it at the provincial level if there's a bigger problem happening. And that is available also during training if you want to use it during an exercise or in a real event. Moving on to exercises. It's important to make sure that you exercise your plan. Having a plan is only half of the issue. You also need to practice it so that people feel what it is and what it says. It very much is a live document, it's already been said. But if people don't know what's in there, then that slows down the process. And in an emergency, you don't always have time to be looking for those types of information. So practicing and using it in an exercise, it can be something simple as a tabletop, or it can be bigger with a full-scale exercise with people on the ground simulating an emergency and dealing with it. So I support Brian and Lou in that, and by extension yourselves. I'm available all the time to support in working through little bits of the plan. And in practicing that plan, that means that you can identify any gaps or any, okay, that's not quite right anymore because of this, it needs to be changed, that we can update the plan to make sure that it's as accurate as we need it to be. You're not always going to have the 100% solution, but that's never the expectation. But if you can have an all-hazards plan that can be adaptable to any situation, then that just makes it easier when an emergency does happen that it can be dealt with faster. We have a new training and exercise team at our office. We have an training exercise officer and a manager. And so coming in the fall, we're going to be doing more provincial exercises, which you will be invited to participate. The coordinator and the committee will be invited to participate. Some of them will be small, just log into WebEOC, communicate with the provincial coordination center. Some of them will be a bit bigger. And we'll be doing two exercises each year when we get the rotation started. One will be based on a critical infrastructure concern. We did one in May about the Kansas Causeway and what would happen if it got washed out. And then the second one will be called a crawl, walk, run rotation. And so the first one will be this year, or sorry, will be in February, and it will be simply a communication. You can communicate through WOC to the coordination center, and we'll have some simple index that you'll have to deal with and assess and send back. And then we'll start that cycle, then the next year we'll do it again. A little more complicated. The third year, we'll try to do a full-scale exercise with the people out, and we'll probably rotate around the province and decide how we're gonna implement that. So that's what we're working on right now. Having these plans are important, but exercising them are just as important, so that you understand what's in there and that all of the hazards are being addressed as much as they can be. Thank you.
Well, I think the WebOC is going to be something you're going to enjoy, because you'll be able to see what's happening in logistics or what's happening at the site, the emergency. By checking on the website, you'll have authority to look at it. So you won't have to call anybody. Just get on there, and we'll be able to see who's doing what and who's got problems, what they need, without calling anybody. So it's going to make a big difference. Okay, so moving on. Heather is going to do communications.
So, as many of you know, through different situations we've had over the past couple of years, I send out emails and post on social media and post on our website to alert the public of upcoming and at the time emergency situations or potential emergencies. Some of those things involve weather. One of the things that has come up in our planning committee meetings is there could be a use for a flyer to be developed, which would have information go to all residents in Queens, so they would have at their fingertips information about what to do in case of an emergency. So if there was a forest fire, a flood, some other situation where extended power outage, what have you, some information about what they could do to help themselves. Number one, for the 72 hours, be prepared to isolate myself for 72 hours if people can't get to me. But also, how to make your own emergency kit, and some important phone numbers, and non-emergency numbers, those sorts of things. And a lot of those resources will come already being compiled federally, provincially, and other places. So we can R&D rather duplicate from the critical customer communications program that NSPI has, Nova Scotia Power has a database that they compile of people, and it's self-submitted. If you have a health issue that requires you to have power to operate your medical equipment, they put you on a priority list, so that they know that in that area, if they can get power back quickly, or that people need to be able to get you somewhere where you can get to power.
How is that working, Heather? Is it getting a lot of feedback from that?
We put the posts up periodically on Facebook. We haven't sent a flyer. I'm not 100% sure how their database is working. That's not something they share with me.
It'd be nice to know just what the people we have.
I know at one point it was a bit out of date.
So for during Hurricane Dorian, they've had this list for quite a long time. And during Hurricane Dorian, when of course the extended power outages, and they had to keep changing their times for the timing of restoration. And so this became an identified issue, because when people provided their information to be put on the list, they didn't give permission to say they could share it. So at the Provincial Coordination Center, we were kind of stuck that because of privacy, they couldn't give us the information. So what that ended up happening was, if there was somebody on the list that was going to be delayed again or for multiple times for the restoration, they gave the dates, and then we reached out to the coordination, their EMC, to see if they could go do a wellness check and just to inform them that it was going to be a bit longer and if they needed any additional support. And so going forward, because they identified this during Dorian, they wanted to go back to the individuals and ask permission. Can we share this? Can we share your information during an emergency with the emergency coordinators in your municipalities? And so they're working through the list right now to get that permission from the folks that are on the list. And going forward, anybody new that's getting added, they get asked that question so that we have permission to use their information when another storm like that happens.
Yes, so other information on the flyer would develop and evolve through the committee. We have a section on our website which you can check in at any time. BMO has a tab on our website. It's filled with all sorts of links and information about different types of emergencies and different ways to protect yourself and look after yourself and your family. There's also a section on our website, the BMO section, about COVID health protocols, which early in the pandemic, we were putting up lots of information, but as it has evolved, we're putting up more about check the provincial website, because it's one-stop shopping there. Everything is there. Communications and associations won't be up to date and very current. And information changes so quickly, especially now with vaccines and that whole evolution of the pandemic. So we've kept everything there, so you can still go back and look. We are encouraging people to check the provincial website first. As I mentioned, we do put things on social media, Facebook, the website, whenever there's anything coming up. Just example, last week or the week before, there was that heat wave, so that was up and encouraging people to seek shade and make sure they stay hydrated and those sorts of things, and directing them to Environment Canada's website where there's more information. On the topic of emergency alert systems, that's something else we've talked about in the planning group. About 2 years ago, it was identified that maybe that might be something we might want to look into for our community, a mass notification system to say that something was happening that people should be aware of. So over the past 2 years, I've taken, I guess, webinars or information sessions with eight companies that offer different types of apps or engagement or emergency alerting programs that you can subscribe to and have tailored to your community. It's something that's still being reviewed by the planning group. Some of the things that they can do, whether they text you or email you, a robocall, all sorts of different things. Some of them can triangulate specific areas that only will be alerted, or will only get a certain amount of information. Let's say there's a forest fire and you wanted to let people know that you are being evacuated in half an hour or an hour or whatever, pack your things and go. You tell that group of people in the evacuation area one thing, and then you have your family that will be out around there that could alert them of other people outside that area of what they're doing, of the board in that area, be aware of what's happening. So there's all sorts of different things that all of these different types of systems can do. I think Ron's going to talk next about different systems.
So the advantage of having these other systems is you have control over it, and you can use it for whatever a notification that you want to have. The disadvantage, of course, is there's a cost of some kind. There is a national program that you're probably familiar with called Alert Ready. You would have received the alerts on your phone already with some of the incidents that occurred finished working with the police, because most of the, or a lot of the alerts that we provided are police-related, with dangerous persons or those types of things. And, but this is also available to you as a municipal, unit. There are 32 broadcast immediate alerts, like if you wanted to do a boil water order that the town of Annapolis just did last week. That's something that you can use the system for. It's simply to contact Brian. It's approved through the CAO. You fill out the form with all of the information, the who, what, when, or why, the instructions you want the public to adhere to, whether they need to evacuate or whether they need to boil their water for, you know, a certain amount of time, et cetera, et cetera. And then the alert gets sent out. The advantage of the Alert Ready system is you don't have to subscribe. It goes out on your phone as long as your phone is a newer model. If people have an older model phone, then they won't have the technology in the phone to receive the message. So that's a disadvantage. But the alert still goes out on TV and radio. So it will, you know, this is an interruption of the emergency broadcast system. That's what this is. And so there's 32 that's broadcast immediate and 130 that are not broadcast immediate. So it won't interrupt the programming, and it'll be provided with you know, the news commentator or the DJ or whatever it is. So that's available to you, and there will be more information provided on that system so that you are ready to use it if you need to.
Any questions about that? Alert system. Okay. And we'll move on to
Exercise Handshake is just a monthly exercise. It's held on the last Tuesday of every month. When we had our little room here in the back, we used to come in, we'd fire up all the radios, the ham radios and the TMR, that's trunk mobile radios. It's a provincial system, and we do radio checks, and just in the last 6 months, New Brunswick and PDI have also joined in on that same exercise because they operate on the same type of radio system. So it's just an opportunity for the guys that do comms to get together once a month to check all the equipment up to and including, we have a sat phone, so we do a monthly check on the sat phone to make sure that it's working. We have an antenna on the roof, all ready to go. So it's just a monthly exercise.
Okay, and the last while people have been asking, or some people have been asking about the CBC tower and the CBC radio. And when the power goes out, we lose the radio. So I checked with CBC and to tell you that there is no standby power. There's no battery, there's no generator. When the power goes out, we lose everything on the CBC. There's no radio transmission whatsoever. And of course, the next question is, why don't we have it or get it? Well, and why do we not have a generator and other places do? Well, the way the CBC rates them by population, so they figure how many people can receive the signal that they're putting out. That number of people puts them in a category. For example, Halifax is a category one, so they have standby power. The valley is a three, and that's qualified for a generator by population. Liverpool is a four, no standby power. So I guess if we had more population, then we would be qualified for a generator. So what's asked of the future is for this area, and they're going to redo the building, but there's no plan for a generator. Or they changed the policy. But they did say that if the region was interested in entering in some kind of a partnership or funding agreement, they would look at sharing the cost of putting in a generator and whatever else they need to get it running when the power's out.
There
so
was never a generator there, Brian?
No. Well, unless they were working on something or whatever. But
because I had a lot of calls about that too, and it seemed like said that there always was a battery backup there.
No.
They got
Not according to the people that, that work there. So, they should know. So, that brings us to questions. The Alert Ready and the other systems they spoke of, there is one system that's available that we can draw a circle or a square on a map. And that's the place we can send the signal to, the message to, which was really attractive. Because as an example, in Midway River, we could draw a triangle around the river and send up, say, the water level is getting higher, it's starting to go down, we should be able to go back in a week or so or whatever. That was very attractive. The bottom line or the restraint is that you have to sign up for this. In other words, I have to go to your place and try to explain it to you. Can you, we get your number and name, get you to sign this form so we can send that information over to you. So if everyone signs up, then you've got total coverage. But if they don't, so it's a drawback.
They use the Alert Ready, that's the emergency alert, and anybody, is it within a certain GPS location, gets it?
That works on cell tower technology.
It works
so
on cell tower. So the way that we promote using the system is you can draw a polygon around the area, but it, because it is based on cell towers, is that going to hit an area with a tower in it? If it doesn't, then it's not going to go to anybody. So what we promote is sending it to the whole county, that there's something happening. So then that identifies to people who maybe want to travel to that area to turn around or not go there, or the people who are actually in the area to then to follow the instructions that's provided. Of course, you know, it's not an exact science because the cell towers are not, you know, they don't follow the lines of the county that we've drawn on the map. So sometimes there might be a little bit of expansion in Shelburne or Lunenburg, and then of course if it's something that's even bigger than that, then we could select the entire province to receive it, or we can select several counties to receive it. Okay.
There seems to be a lot of dead zones with cell reception, and
yes, and that's yes.
Yeah, I know.
So
when
on top of having, you know, if you have an older phone, you're not going to receive it, but if you're in a dead zone, then obviously you're not going to receive it. You'll receive it when you come out of the dead zone. So a lot of the complaints that we get is that people repeatedly get it. So if you turn off your phone and turn it back on again, it'll think that you're entering the area for the first time and you'll get the alert again. If you go in and out of a dead zone, you'll get the alert again. And so that's,
I know before they put the fiber op in last fall in Greenfield where I live, I wasn't able to access cable or like any TV that way. So all of our TV, we had one channel over the air, and over the air doesn't get that either. So we had no cell reception, and only over the air TV. So we never were able to get them, or it would come in hours later when we finally got reception area.
Yeah,
so it's a weakness, but it's
it is, yeah. It's a challenge.
Yeah, we need a new cell tower.
So another thing I should mention is that we have something that may help you in an emergency situation. We are working on a guide for elected officials.
Okay.
What part you would play in this.
Yeah.
And that's pretty well ready to go, I think, isn't it? It's getting close, anyway. But we'll get that to you as quick as we can. And it might help you think about what you might have to do or what you may not want to do if there is an emergency.
And what we shouldn't do so we don't cause more problems.
Yeah, so anyways, I'll get that out to you shortly.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Just if I could make a comment, just so council's aware, the biggest challenge I think EMO has really is getting solid participation from all the emergency agencies. So, I mean, as Brian said, we meet quarterly. You could sit at a table, there might be five people there when there should be 15 or 20. So we have some agencies in Queens County that I haven't seen that table ever. And so the time will come when they have an emergency and they're going to need us, and we're still going to have to respond. But we're not going to be very helpful because we don't know the details of their operations. We know some, but we don't know what they're going to need, what they're not going to need. We don't know what their logistics are, how they plan to approach it, what staffing and things they have available, or what they're gonna look for. So it makes it very challenging for Brian and Lewis, who are trying to coordinate all that, not knowing, and they're worried about the weather, they're worried about all the hazardous chemicals traveling by truck or whatever on the highway and stuff. They're not worrying about planning for each individual emergency association or agency or department. But the time will come when those people need us, and they haven't been at the table, but we're still gonna have to respond. And so it's unfortunate that they don't see the benefit of coming to a meeting once every 3 months for a couple hours and sharing and learning what resources are available and what all the other agencies are doing, but also contributing what they are gonna contribute to other groups in the event of emergency, as well as what they may need or what their expectations are. It's unfortunate, but that's like, that's for me, it's the biggest challenge we have is that, like I said, some people around that some agencies have never been to a meeting as long as I've been here. And we've sent out letters, we've sent out extra letters to them and remind them of the importance of participating, and they still do not participate, which is unfortunate.
Something that I always thought about here too is that, you know, that we've had the problems before in the past, especially like with wind and rain and storms and things, trees going down across the road. There's always been complaints that the fire department will go out and cut trees up and they shouldn't be going up because you don't know what's going on. Well, I've seen it before where, you know, coming in from Caledonia into Liverpool, all of a sudden there's trees across the road. Well, somebody had to go to the hospital. They get halfway in and all of a sudden they run into this tree. I mean, they have to go because they have to get in here, but they don't know there's a tree there. And then, you know, and people are waiting not just past the 72 hours, but just waiting to later on, which should be a priority to keep that roadway open. So then you get people like the fire department will go out and cut it out because they'd say, we're not gonna leave our people in that kind of spot. And they get blamed for going out when they shouldn't be going out. So what kind of coordination, and also too, I'll put a two-part to you, because the second one is, I've always said I'd love to see that we could be able to get access to things like sand. So that people could, on their own, if they started getting, where it's gonna be flooding or something, they could be able to get bagged and sandbag around to be able to keep themselves. It's something you could work on yourself, that even if TIR said, yeah, you can go up and get up here and start getting bags and sand if you needed to. Anything just to give somebody an opportunity to try to help themselves.
Well, sand is pretty obvious, President. We should be able to make some kind of arrangements for sand, but that'd take a few to work, get it done. The tree cutting, I can't really comment on that. I'm not sure if the fire department cuts a tree over here and then you've got a tree down over there and then there's a fire up here. I'm not sure how they're gonna, very quick to cut all the trees cut down. Sometimes there are quite a few, but it is TIR responsibility. TAT, whatever it is.
Yeah,
what
you call new name is.
So that's the department that, well, they are, when they're called off the road, they're called off the road.
Yeah.
And the fire department wants to go and take their place. That's the fire department. I can't speak for the fire department. And I'm not saying don't go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell them what to do. That's their responsibility. Whatever they want to do, they do.
After Dorian, that was identified as an issue, and transportation said, like, even though they were called off the road, if there was the scenario that you described where somebody needed to get through, they would have went, right? If they were called, they just needed to be
at that point.
They would have went and done it. They would
even
like,
if they called off the
right,
road, they would.
They were called off for general, for safety.
Okay.
But in that moment, if something needed to be done, they would have been there. So I think that, just a communication of, and it means
okay.
it's difficult. You're not gonna know everything that's happening and all the risks that are out there. You're not gonna know every tree that's across the road.
Mm-hmm.
But if people are identifying, like, that live nearby to say, yes, they know that road, that tree is down and they can call it in, then you can get it on the list to go, you know, transportation knows it's there, they can add it on the priority list. The EHS will know that it's there so that they can, you know, try and find a detour or what have you. So
okay.
There is some coordination that can happen, and those conversations have started with the planning committee. And that's something that maybe we want to exercise. get down on a tabletop and talk about how can we manage that so that the next time that it happens, we're better prepared.
I'll look into the sand thing and I'll get back to you.
Because people, no matter what, people will react or they shouldn't react. You know that. They just say you're supposed to be in for 72 hours, for somebody's in trouble, you go help them. Mm-hmm. So you do those things because people, even though you shouldn't be doing it, you do it, and that kind of thing. The same thing as I'd love to have, see somewhere or another, be able to have a couple generators. Just, it may not be for safety, but if people's fridges and everything's all, they're going to lose all their food, if somebody could just have a generator go around and put a couple hours into something to get things cold again, to especially if you're going past the 72 hours, and you could be able to have access to that or something. I don't know. It's just, if people will do something, they're not going to lose their food. They'll do strange things.
Well, I think we're all
doing so.
Good. Rhonda? Brian and Heather, thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you very much.
I was wondering why I'm not sitting down.
You sat down too much this morning?
No, I ruptured the disc in my back.
Oh, we thought you were being the Lord of us all.
I can sit for about 5 minutes and I can lay down for an hour. And I'll tell you.
Well, we thank you. We are glad to have our updated plan book. Because I know the other one needed a lot of updating. So, and if anyone notices anything, or if anyone knows of a change in your community association, or the treasurers, or the because as you look, you'll see these contact lists for all the halls. I believe that is not share.
We purposely removed all the names from the plan so that we don't have to update names anymore, that we just have to update the phone number. And the phone numbers are checked every month.
For the contact names for all the centers and things?
There's no names. There's just West Queens Recreational Center, and there is a phone number. We know that Kathy Williams is the president, but
tomorrow,
right? Tomorrow might not. So we Troy, most of the, and Shelley maintains a list of all the employees and their phone numbers. So in the event that the EOC is stood up, she will actually generate that list so that we have all the important phone numbers of all the important people that work within the municipality for that emergency.
Okay.
So all the emergency numbers are in there under organization and not by individual, mostly. I think, is it Dexter from... Mr. Dexter from the ambulance service, EHS. There might be one or two names, but they're very rare.
All right. Yeah, there's just a few of them.
Yeah.
Okay, so I thank you. It's always good to, so you're writing for another EMO. In fact, you have not done one of those for a while, have you? Your mock emergencies?
We did a tabletop in the fall. It was difficult because of COVID. But during the fall, when we had that little bubble of being able to travel, I did come down, and we had some of the fire departments here. We talked through a scenario and worked through it. And once COVID is, once the protocols are a little lighter, then we'll be able to do more.
You need to put your feet back on the ground. And anyway, I thank you. And if you have any questions of us, you know where we are. Mm-hmm. And if any of us have any questions of you, where they are.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay,
thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Except
there.
Yeah. And we should have a motion to go in camera. Moved by Councillor Brown, seconded by Councillor Mero. All those in favor?
Better set up the guy going at that door the one.
Yes, it is. They're doing a good job.
We just, Tom tried to maneuver his wheelchair over there, and I had them. Well, I was scared that he'd go upside of it.
And the night of our swearing in, somebody stepped in the hole up there.
I think he did.
I'll let you know when I get back in the picture, I can't think of his name.
Thank you.
An older guy, I didn't get him. Who was it that fell the night of swearing in? Came with you for the.
Leo.
Leo Longman, yeah.
It was Leo.
Looks much better with there.
It could be that way Leo would fall.